It's now time for Cannabis Talk 101 with Blue, Joe Grande, and Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law. We're the world's number one podcast for everything cannabis.
Hey, it's Cannabis Talk 101 with Blue, Joe Grande, and Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law. Hope you're having a great day. Another special edition, you guys. Mark and I actually got a chance to interview his dad, Benny Wasserman. That's right, Mark and Craig Wasserman's father, Senior Benny Wasserman. Now, we did this as we were recording the Grande Was podcast, just having some fun a while back, but we decided to air this so that you guys can get a chance to know us a little better and see what our dynamic is all about. So here's a little special edition of Cannabis Talk 101 with Benny Wasserman, the father of Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law. Welcome to the Grande Was Show. I'm Joe Grande. Of course, with me, the infamous little brother of the Pot Brothers at Law, Mr. Mark Wasserman.
Hey, how you doing, brother? Joe, I'm doing fantastic.
It feels like it's been a while since we recorded our show.
It has. It's been too long. You've been putting me off. I don't know what's the deal.
Well, I don't know, because now I feel worried and threatened, because now I get, you know, your dad is here in the studio with us. Welcome, Mr. Benny Wasserman.
Welcome.
I don't know if he brought you here to threaten me, or you guys are just, you know, I got two Jews now, and I got the pops here.
I just figured you'd have a good time meeting my, well, you've met him, but talking to my dad.
I actually look forward to this. It's funny, Benny, I didn't realize you were a retired aerospace engineer. You worked actually at the Apollo mission, and you're in the same department as Falcon and the Snowman, which is interesting, and I want to hear more about that. Also, the thing I love, which I didn't realize you were when I looked at you, you're an Einstein lookalike, an author of three books, and a father, of course, of the Pot Brothers at Law, and a doctor, which we're going to talk about all that, and even talk about these books, as you signed one for my daughter Rayleigh and my son Trey. So I can't wait to get into all that, but thank you so much for coming to the Grande Studios.
You're quite welcome.
And let's start with before kids, and I'm sure you probably did that when you were with kids, but retired aerospace engineer working on the Apollo mission. And it's just funny how we just had the, you know, the anniversary not too long ago.
That's absolutely correct.
Did that anniversary have any emotional feel for you?
Funny part is, answer is no. It should have been yes. But that's only because of my attitude when I was working in those kind of programs, that I really didn't care about aerospace.
Really? It was just a job?
It was just a job, just a paycheck. And I'm so sad about that, because every time I worked on one of the little black boxes, I never asked the question, what does it go into and what does that go into?
So you're just an engineer programming and doing what you're supposed to do.
I actually started out as a technician, and before I ever became an engineer.
By trade.
Yeah, and all that. Yeah, it's not fascinating.
How did you get the job there?
Oh, my God. How did I get the job?
Because not too many people get to, you know, work as an engineer in aerospace, and let alone get to work on the Apollo. So how did you even get your foot in the door? Were you an intern? Did you start off picking up garbage? Like myself in radio, I literally started off in promotions passing out stickers. So how do you get such a good gig at such a – or how old were you when you even started?
Oh, my God. This takes me back all the way to the beginning.
Here we go.
He is 85.
I'm 85. It's going to take him some time to remember some of these answers. Is that what you're saying?
I could help out a little.
I
could prod a little.
You may have to sharpen the tools for him. Is that what you're saying?
No, I remember some.
I've gone over this so many times that the short story becomes a very long story.
Well, hey, we're here. We're here. I'm talking to you. I'm looking at you. I want to hear it. I don't know it.
So the question is, how did I get into aerospace? And I'll just start with going to a trade school in L.A., coming from Detroit, Michigan.
The D.
The big D.
But talk about what happened just before you left. Something about grand theft or...
Detroit because you're a derelict? Is that what I'm smelling here?
Well, no. There were allegations. There was never a conviction or anything like that, right? Something.
Okay. Yeah? If you want me to go there, I'll go there.
Let's open up, man. This is therapy right here. Grande Was Show is more about opening up and letting loose. And here, unlike your son, I'm not going to kick you out of this therapy session. So you're going to be okay here.
That is funny. Okay, so I hated school. I hated reading. And I had a friend in the neighborhood. I won't mention his name, although he died at the age of 30 of a heart attack. He was 2 years older than me, and he was looking out for me. I kind of lived in a rough neighborhood, and So I did whatever he told me to do. And so in high school, he, I got me my first job. Well, my first job. I was working at a bakery for my dad. And from there, I decided I didn't want to do that. And my friend Chucky, that's his first name, asked me if I wanted to drive a truck. I just learned how to drive. And so he was a truck driver for a small company delivering tobacco and candy. And he became a salesman, and I became the truck driver. And he said, I want you to, when you load the truck up with the list of tobacco and candy, cases of all of these things, add another case or two on the truck, even though it's not on the list, prepared by the boss. And then he would go on to explain to me that we're going to sell those cases of cigarettes to,
as you should,
to retailers that he was going to, that he made a deal with, that he could get them to buy the case of cigarettes for half price, half, and then we would split the other half.
Okay.
And I said, what if we get caught?
So you were already pretty smart then back then.
No, I wasn't. Yeah.
That's a good question, by the way. Hey, I got an idea. What if we get caught doing this stuff?
Yeah, what if we get caught? So he goes on to tell me, well, he takes me in the back room one day when the back doors are opening up at twilight time and cars are lined up with their trunks open. And what's in the trunks? Half cases of cigarettes that were stolen from somewhere else. And they were being sold to my boss.
Awesome.
So my boss is, so my buddy Chucky tells me,
they're not going to figure it out.
How are they going to explain to anybody? They don't have inventory on this stuff. If they don't have inventory, there's no accounting. So if we take a couple of cases here and there, nobody's going to ever know.
Okay.
So we did that for 6 months. And made a few bucks, enough for me to buy a car.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm 18 years old.
And back then, a car cost about $700.
$1,800.
Ooh, okay.
It was a good car.
Jeez, look at you, balling.
Convertible.
Convertible, huh? Oh, so you're doing the drug dealer car then. Back then, even. First car was a convertible. Oh, excuse me, my last name's Wasserman. Benny's on the road. Beep, beep, back up. I like it.
So somewhere along the line there, my buddy decides he's going to make more money by going to another company, a meatpacking company, where they cut up the beef and sold them to people with freezers who they ordered half a cow, and it was all split up and packaged and everything. So I went to work for them, and this time I just stole a few steaks.
Nice.
When I was loading the freezers, I would just take a few
filet
steaks.
Mignon,
well, you had to eat.
All the above.
You had to eat.
And then one day, when the guy was delivering from the slaughterhouse, the half quarters, he asked me if I wanted to work in the slaughterhouse. And I said, I'm not working on a kill floor. I didn't know what a kill floor was, he was explaining. But he wanted to hire me as a truck driver. So I went to work there and driving a truck, delivering the sides of beef. And one day the owner asked me if I wanted to, the guy who was killing the cows got sick. So he asked me if I would come down on the kill floor and kill cows. I said, no way. And he said, we're going to give you $10 a week more.
Well,
and
maybe.
For me, it was all about, and the hours, the sooner you kill the 60 cows, the sooner you leave.
Line them up. Bam, bam, bam. How do you kill a cow? What's the way? I don't even know.
I had to use a sledgehammer at the time.
Wow.
A sledgehammer. So they
Benny, you're a straight freaking murderer. I love it. Who knew?
No.
Seriously, it was a sledgehammer back then?
Sledgehammer. So they gave
Would blood squirt on your body? Sometimes?
No. I was...
Benny Blanco, would that ever happen to you, sir? Now I'm getting nervous. Don't look at my swords.
No.
I don't want to get yacked over here.
No, so they the cows would come down the ramp and go into this area, and I would have to walk up three steps and look down on these cows. And I was holding the sledgehammer, and I started hitting it on top of the head over and over and over again, maybe 10 times. and I couldn't lift the sledgehammer up again.
After 10 whacks, you were done.
After 10 whacks. I was a
skinny. The arms were killing you.
I was 6 foot, 1.5, weighed 135 pounds. Skinny, skinny thing. And then the guy, someone else comes up and with a ball peen hammer, hits the cow between the eyes.
Bink.
And down it goes, the tongue comes out, and they start the process of cutting up the cow.
So that's how you learned how to kill a cow.
That's how but that's the only cow I killed.
Oh, it was one and done.
That was one and done. The other guy came back to work, and they gave me a job at the end of the line where I'm washing everything after everything is cut and put on a rail. They're coming down the rail, and I'm washing the ends off. And then they initiated me one day.
How's that?
They filled up a bucket of the guts and blood, and as I was turning the water off and turned around, they took the bucket and threw it in my... at my head,
oh,
into disgusting. My eyes, ears, nose. And I wanted to go after them like you can't believe. Instead, I ended up being a good sport, laughing.
Oh, that's the initiation.
No, wait. And I'm going back quite a few years here. That's not what happened. I was going to go at them. But they took a high-pressure hose.
And pushed you back with it?
And were washing me off. And pushing me back. I couldn't get near them.
So before you can even get him, they go, nope, we know what's going to happen. He's going to come after us, just as game planned.
Yeah. So I did that for 6 months, and then ended up in the Army. But that gets into
Thank you for your service. Always appreciate a good Army man.
But that gets into another story about my friend Carl, who loaned me.
Who saved you what happened? That, did Carl basically, your relationship with him, send you out to California?
Okay, so there's two group of friends I had. One on one in the hood and one from school. And I lived right on the line, what they call, you know, across the railroad tracks.
Right, like the good old 8 mile
eight
run.
Mile.
Yeah.
The poor people on one side, the richer people on the other side. So I used to play basketball with those guys in their backyard.
When you say those guys, you're talking to poor people?
The Richies.
No, the Richies, okay.
Yeah, yep, more affluent.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know the word affluent at the time. And so we would play basketball, and this one kid, Carl, I would get on my bike and go home to get ready for my nighttime paper route. I had two paper routes, paper. And so anyway, he'd go into the house as I was leaving and come out with a book. He said, here, try reading or read it. I go home, hold it for 2 weeks, take it back, never having read the book, hoping, cross my fingers, that he never asked me.
Right.
And so that went on for a couple of years like that, where he went in and got books. And there's four of them. I always remembered three. Emil Zola wrote, there was Viva Zapata, whatever they were. And then he goes off to Swarthmore College. No, Jesus, I got to tell this whole story. I love it, though. It's for me, it's just...
You're taking me down memory lane. I'm enjoying it.
It's the story of my... he comes over, getting ready to go to college. He comes over to my house. So, Benny, where are you going to college?
He said, what? Where?
I don't, you know, I...
didn't apply?
Wanted to do was be a professional baseball player at that time also.
What position?
Shortstop. First 20 years of my life, that's all I wanted to do. I played sandlot ball, and that's all I loved. That was it for me. So, Carl...
And he's illiterate.
No, and I'm...
he was illiterate.
Yeah, my wife doesn't want me to say I'm illiterate.
He was. He was.
I could see the resemblance with your son Mark here.
Yeah, thank you.
He was, but you know, he pulls it together to get it.
Wait.
So go ahead.
I know, but so
he asked you where you're going. He goes off to college.
He goes off to college. No, he comes over and he said, and I said, we can't afford it. No, he can buy that. Except he goes home and he gets his father. I don't know how it happened. He knew what the tuition was to Wayne University. In Detroit. He goes home and he gets his father to write out a check for $75, which was...
To go to college.
He comes back the next day. He said, what's your excuse now?
Wow.
And he goes off.
What a friend dad, though, too. Like, it takes a village, and what a dad to... Okay, son, let me help your boy out. And that's dope. I love that.
No idea what happens. what continues to happen with this guy.
Tell it.
He goes off. I go to Wayne University at night because I'm working in a bakery full time.
Family needs help. You need the money.
With my dad and all that.
His dad owned the bakery.
No, my brothers owned the bakery. My half brothers owned the bakery. But
you're working. You're going to school.
Oh yeah, I get halfway through the semester, and I'm taking English and history. The worst thing I could ever do. If anything, I always advocated taking out of high school, taking classes that you enjoy initially and do the general requirements later. But at any rate, I take English and history. I get halfway through, I'm getting Fs in both classes. I drop out. That's the end of that. And that's how Carl enters my life that way with the $75. And then he comes back on break 2 years later.
After you dropped out for a year now?
No, I was only in for a few months. Half a semester. He comes back after there's a college break 2 years later. And he's asking me, what am I doing? How am I doing? I said, well, I didn't make it with the school. I'm working in a slaughterhouse. I'm working in a slaughterhouse. You know, how do I tell this guy? He says, oh, I'll tell you, I was listening on the radio and I heard that you could volunteer for the draft. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to get you. And you're not doing special work for the government. You're not going to school. They're going to get you. You're 20 years old. And
this is Vietnam.
No. This is just after the Korean War. After the Korean War.
Okay.
So he heard that you could volunteer for two. And a normal volunteer had to go in for three. But if you volunteer for the draft, they'll take you for two.
Okay.
So I go in the Army. I spend my 2 years. His thing was, think about what you want to do the rest of your life.
Good head on his shoulder. What a friend.
Think what you want to do. Yeah, so finally I get out. And at some point, light bulb goes on and it says, there was nothing in, nothing out. I didn't gain anything except learning how to shoot people.
That's a good, that could be useful.
I didn't read. I didn't do anything because there was nothing in here to think about.
Right.
Except baseball, wanting to be a pro. Now, before I went in the Army, I did try out with a farm club of the Washington Senators, the Chattanooga Lookouts.
Okay.
I went down from Detroit to Florida.
Winter Garden.
And was told by George Myatt after a month of trying out with 100 other guys, and I was getting on the bus to get ready to go home, when I saw this coach, George Myatt, sitting on a bench, I walked over and I said, how did I do? And he said, what's your name? What's my name? I walked away in tears towards the bus. He called me back. And he pulled out his notebook. He said, what's your number? 66. That was my number.
Right.
And he looked at it and he said, hey, you're a damn good fielder. Really hustled. But you can't throw, you can't hit, and you can't run. Don't ever think of making a living out of this game. and that was the end. I took his word.
As gospel.
And never looked at the sporting page of a newspaper again. Never kept track of anything. My Tigers, my Detroit Tigers.
You didn't lose anything, by the way, because they never did anything, so it didn't matter. I'm sure you know that, but go ahead.
No, so I end up going into service, and I come out. I hope I didn't skip
anything. No, you're good. There. You got it.
No, and I come out of the service, and
you got nothing out of it.
I got nothing out of it, but I take my. My dad and my stepmother to California to visit my sister. And while I'm there, I get to visit my stepmother's aunt or cousin or whomever, who live in Beverly Hills.
Rough area.
Rough, very rough area. And there lives...
Not a lot of Jews there.
A young lady lives there who's my age, and she wants to know a little bit about me.
You mean at that time your age or right now your
age? At that time...
Because was she 80-something when you met her?
No.
Okay, so she was 20-something when you met her.
About 24.
Okay, got it.
And she was going to UCLA.
Great
and,
school.
And she wanted to know a little bit about me. And what was I going to tell her? I drove a truck. And
I killed cows.
Yeah.
Stole cigarettes.
Yeah. I'm amazing with a sledgehammer, but I couldn't kill a cow.
No, but what she does, here's another a time when somebody else comes into your life and you think you're taking advantage of her suggestion. She said, look, you have the GI Bill, right? And I said, what's a GI Bill?
Exactly. You didn't even know. It's amazing.
No. She said, I know an instructor who's very aware of those kind of things. And go talk to him. And he might give you some advice. So one way or another, either it was at from Pierce College in the Valley.
In the Valley, yeah.
And
That's my last school I went to, ironically, to get my degree. Because I almost graduated from Southern State. Anyhow, that's a whole other story. But go ahead.
Right.
I know exactly where it's at is my point.
Right. So I talked to him. And he tells me to take the VA exam, aptitude and attitude test. So I go back to Detroit, and I go to the VA office, and they give me these tests. And right off the bat, the guy says, we're not sending you to college.
Because of an STD.
Not quite.
When you said test, my mind went there. Sorry. Okay. They didn't have that test then. Okay, never mind. Being in the military for 2 years, who knows what happened?
He hadn't done that.
No, he was in the military for 2 years, Mark. Don't get your dad twisted. Benny was laying pipe. Go ahead, Benny.
No. So they told me, the results that they had for whatever tests I took showed that I didn't read very well or write very well or anything. So we're not sending you to college. I said, you got that right.
Yeah. You're all, no shit, Sherlock. It doesn't take an Einstein to figure that out for me.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Ain't for me. So then it meant, so what else are we going to tell this kid to do? So they said, how would you like to be a barber?
Cutting hair.
It shows that you're a sociable guy. And I said, no, I don't want to be a barber. I don't want to be a barber. The next thing out of their mouths was, how would you like to go into electronics? What the hell is electronics?
Right.
I had no idea. He said, it doesn't matter. We're going to send you to a trade school. And I said, you have to read? Hands-on. It's all hands-on. And now, do you want to go in California where your sister is? Or you want to go in Detroit? We'll set you up with schools. We'll tell you where the schools are. I ended up going to L.A. Ended up going to national schools for 18 months, learning radio and TV repair. Memorize everything. There was a textbook. Didn't understand shit from the textbook.
Right, like, oh, God, could someone read
this
to me?
But they didn't care. The school didn't care. They made their
money. Just work on these bulbs, learn how the wiring, all the good stuff, what the technology
the tubes,
was.
Tubes. And at the end of 18 months learning a TV, I could do a whole schematic. I could lay out everything in a goddamn schematic.
That's awesome.
That a TV was made of. So anyway, I graduate. But just before I graduate, I meet my wife. Oh, by the way.
In L.A.?
Wait. It was in January of 58, February I would graduate, and I'm getting ready to go back to Detroit to marry a young lady I had known since high school, wrote to her while I was in the service.
This is not your wife now, correct? That's what you're referring to in Detroit?
That's correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm following the story correctly.
So...
Was her fiance murdered or killed or anything like that? Because your son's story of ex-wives or wives just throws me for a fucking loop sometimes. I just don't want to hear another, crazy story like that.
No.
Thank God.
So in January or December 57, I get fixed up on a blind date. And I call this young lady, Fern, to set up a date. And I was about to fulfill that when I call her again to tell her that I can't afford to go out and at a date. While I was going to trade school, I was working full-time graveyard shift in a bank, sorting checks that came in from local banks into this main facility, whatever they call that. And you had to redo the checks. At any rate, and I was living in a room in someone's home during that whole time. Well, not the whole time, because I ended up before I met Fern, I ended up living in a fourplex with eight other guys, you know, that kind of thing. So I have this blind date that I called to cancel it, and the mother answers the phone. Fern's not home. Mother answers the phone, and I tell her I can't make it. I can't afford it. And the mother says, "Don't worry about it. Come over and have some cookies and milk."
Mr. Rogers is next door. Why not? That just sounds amazing.
So I figured I can't say no to that.
Of course not.
What
a nice lady. Who's this lady? Yeah.
So what I would hear later is Fern comes home. Her mother tells her this, and she lays it out. I'm like, "You made a date. I never met the guy. And
I have no idea who this murderer is." Yeah. Mommy, get me.
Child murderer.
God. Yeah.
Oh, my God. So that day comes. I knock on the door. That's January the 11th, 1958. We go out a few times. January 22nd, 11 days later, I ask her to marry me.
You're kidding me.
I wish I was.
What is it about that time? My parents met 30 days after they met, they were married. My parents. I mean, they're both deceased, so you can't ask them, but I'm telling you the story. Yeah, it's exactly. Matter of fact, my dad's ashes are right over there. I'll introduce you guys before you leave. But
well, he was
that's
much,
funny.
Well,
that's,
he was much brighter than me.
You were 11 days.
You can't be too bright. I always claim three dates. My wife says five dates we had.
Either way, three to five.
But what did we know about each other? She was 19, I was 23, you know, when we met and all that. And so that gets me up to the point with the book. Did I already mention the book?
No, not at all. At least not on this podcast.
Keep going.
I haven't mentioned the book?
No.
No, you haven't started the book yet.
The only thing I mentioned was Carl giving me those books.
Right.
Okay, so we get married. And I invite him from Detroit. Yeah, he was already in the city council of Detroit at that point.
Oh, so Carl's moved on up.
Yeah, he went to Harvard. He became a civil rights attorney, and was in city council, president of city council. And I invite him to my wedding. He couldn't come, so he sends me a gift, a book, Martin Eden by Jack London, with a little silver ashtray, which is interesting. I still have. And I look at the book. I show it to my wife. I said, "There's no way in hell I'm going to read it. I told you, I don't read." And she said, no. So I decided I wanted to call him and ask him, "What the hell are you trying to tell me? You got to be trying to tell me something by sending me a book." He'd never answer the phone. So Fern says, "Shit, he took the time to buy this book. And why don't you just sit down and start reading it?
Right. See what it's about."
And I said, 411 pages.
I love you.
Forget it.
Small print. And
me away too. And no pictures?
No pictures.
Yeah. And they didn't have it on tape yet. It wasn't on.
So somehow I sat down, I started reading the first page. I don't know how many times I read the first page. It was so friggin' boring. And then I read the second and the third. Like I said, it took me 2 years, or maybe I didn't say it. Took me 2 years to read that book. I looked up 747 words, had underlined every one of those and looked them all up in a dictionary, wrote them on separate sheets of paper and in the margins of that book. And I was hooked for the rest of my life to reading and learning. And
this is at the age of about what, 26, 28?
Yeah, that would be about 28.
About 28, now. Yeah.
And
yeah.
By then I had two children.
Oh, wow.
My older
one
brothers.
One of them being Craig.
One of them being Craig and
then I saved
the marriage.
Okay, but
the question was, did I get to be an engineer from radio and TV? And I graduated, and that job at the bank, that was going nowhere. I started looking for a job. And
at the age of 28, you finally read a book.
No, wait.
You have
at 28, I already had a job. 24... when I met Fern, I just graduated the trade school.
So you have a trade now. You're an electrician, basically, an engineer.
No,
what kind of trade?
TV repair.
TV repair guy.
TV repair guy. That's from school. So I initially I did try to get.
And the GI Bill paid for all that?
The GI Bill paid for all.
That's
all
beautiful.
Of it. And
when times were simpler.
And
well, they still help out a lot of military vets now too.
No,
not enough.
Never enough. But yeah,
that's right. Never enough.
Never enough in my book as well.
They should get it all. So here I am getting engaged, never gave her a ring.
Oh, really?
I didn't know what the word. I didn't understand what engagement meant.
Did she ever? Does she ever ring now?
No.
Did you not?
No, she's got one from my stepmother.
You've never bought Fern a ring yet?
No.
Oh my God, Benny! I'm gonna give you a ring to take home with her. And so, I'll charge you for it. So you can buy it. There you go.
So between after graduating, meeting Fern, getting engaged, I'm without a job.
Except perfect time to get married.
Except the one I'm doing graveyard, and I think I hung on to that for a little bit. And I went during the day. I went out looking for a job, and it was hard to get one. The school tried to set me up. They sent me to Northern California, different places. I flunked all their tests, technical tests. And couldn't get a job. A neighbor, someone said, go to Hughes Aircraft. And I said, I don't see any ads in the paper. He said, they have employment offices. Somebody who really knew what was going on in the world. Just go in, tell them what you went to this school, what you learned, and fill out an application. And I did that. And they gave me a test, a 33-question test. And I missed... I don't know how many you have to get right, but whatever it was, I missed it by one. And I just went, I missed it by one. I said, oh, shit. I said, I knew some of those answers. I've got them in my notes at home.
Right.
He said, well, I'll tell you what.
Take it again.
Go home, look at your notes, and then come back. So I went home that same day. I looked at the notes. I had it. I said, I don't know if I should go back, right now. I waited a couple days. Went back, took the test, passed the test, and the guy said, there happens to be an opening.
And then what'd you say and do?
I said, I'll take it. I took the job, and the weird part was that the work I started out doing had nothing to do with anything I learned in school.
And yet, like everything else in school, right?
Like, everything.
That's the story of school and life.
I mean, it was so.
Unless
bad.
You're a nurse, I think. Nurse and doctors,
no.
They learn a lot, but it's still nothing like the real world.
It was so crazy because what I ended up doing was fabrication, creating little boxes for engineers to do a prototype work. I had to learn how to use tools. I never used tools at home. I had to use a drill, and I had to learn how. It really got bad, to where I was not goofing off, but making a lot of mistakes, and I got chance after chance to hang in there, to be a better fabricator. And I said, I want out of here. He said, you got to stay in this department for a year before we can transfer you out. So eventually, I would get transferred out, and to another department where I would test resistors. And I said, to just take data, watch resistors go through vibration and thermovac and all that, and just me just taking data. I went to school to learn more than that. I got to, and so eventually guys from Hughes went over to Litton in the Valley, another aerospace company in Canoga Park. And they would come back with these after taking the 10-question test, and I'd have all the answers from them. A bunch of them had gone. So I go and I take the exam, and they tell me I got them all right. I got them all right. I said, oh my God, I got a job. They call me in for an interview, and I'm sitting down with this guy, and he starts asking me questions about transistors. And over again, I'm telling him, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And I want to get out of there so fast. And the guy says, we'll let you know. I get back in the car. Fern and Michael at the time,
Craig.
Craig wasn't even born yet.
Oh.
Craig wasn't even
born. I forget born. There's that gap.
In my little Volkswagen. And I told Fern, I said, well, that went bad. Everything I answered with, I don't know. 2 weeks later, I get a call. We'd like to talk to you again. We'd like to hire you. And I go, okay. So I get a job there in systems test, something I have no idea what's all about.
What the hell am I doing? Right?
Checking out gyros and platforms that go into the Apollo. That one wasn't the Apollo. That was for some Navy equipment. I I said, I don't have any experience. I'm very blunt. I'm telling him I don't have any knowledge or experience doing any of this. Just try it. If it doesn't work out, well, we can always put you back to what you were doing back at Lytton.
Yeah.
We need people there, too. Remember, it was the time of Sputnik, so they were just getting people right and left into this field. And so I start on the job, and I do quite well. And I last there, I won't go into everything I did there, but I was there for 5 years. And then I wound up, oh God, being talked. I had graduated Pierce.
The junior college.
The junior college.
Uh-huh. And still is junior college, yes.
And I went on to, I changed my major from engineering to sociology because that was my love. If there was going to be academics.
A man of the people.
If there was going to be academics, I wanted to go in that direction. So I started out at UCLA. And I won't go into, I only went one semester. And
his classmate was Lou Alcindor.
Yes. Nice. Yes, by 1965. And then Fern invites a friend of hers, married.
So you're married with one kid as you went to UCLA?
Yeah, and working full time, taking 12 units because, and UCLA didn't want me to, they called me in and they said, you can't take 12 units, work full time. I said, I've got to, I can't afford to do otherwise.
Right.
I'm married, have a kid. And they said, well,
you're not going to do too well, possibly.
We're going to put you on probation.
For no reason off the top, just probation?
You're on probation.
Because you're working?
Yeah.
Bullshit. Secret double probation.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, 12, I took two upper, they let me take two upper division and two lower division courses. They were all in sociology. And I try to convince them that this was what I've been reading so much about. Okay? All the books I started reading and doing, if, all because of that one book. And they said, well, we'll put you on probation. So I go through the year, or the semester, quarter semester, and I end up with a couple of B's and a couple of C's, but I get burned out. That's the end of my education.
Really?
So Fern is inviting, at that point, I was going to continue because I applied to Santa Barbara. That's where they had a great sociology department.
Okay.
And they had on-campus living for married couples. Just to show you the twists and turns these things can take. And just as I'm about to make that move, the school tells me there's no longer...
A sociology program.
No, the program's there, but no on-campus housing. And when I start looking around, because I had bought a house out in the valley for $15,000, believe it or not, on income that was at the bottom of the rung. But I was able to do that. And after 4 years of living there, we sold it, and I was going to use that little bit of money, $2,500, to go to Santa Barbara and live on campus and go to school and finish and maybe get a degree.
With your wife and son.
With my wife and son. Right then and there, my wife invites a friend who's a real estate investor. And he says, Benny, how long is it going to take you to get your master's degree, PhD? And then when you finally get that, are you going to be able to be the kind of research sociologist that you want to be, independent? I said, I don't know what it's going to take. He says, just let me have the $2,500 and I'll let you buy 5 duplexes in East LA. And $500 down and each one, and you'll be the proud owner of 5 duplexes in LA. And I go ahead and do that. And 6 months later, I find out this friend had taken me for a ride. He lied to me about everything.
Mm.
I now the owner, but I decide if that's the way I got in, I got to get out, no matter what the losses are. Yeah, because I met somebody that knew him also that took him for a ride, but he got in so deep he couldn't get out. He was beholden. This friend tried to get me to buy a house in Rolling Hills.
Rolling Heights.
Rolling Heights. He also tried to get me to buy a Lincoln. No, a Cadillac. He said, if you got to, when you go to banks to get loans, you got to look like you're accomplished. You've made it. And I said, I can't get a Cadillac. Instead, I got a Bonneville Pontiac.
Nice.
He had me ending up getting home improvement loans. He knew the ropes on how to get in and get that money.
Right.
But every time I did this,
Was that Blue back in the day? Sounds like a buddy of ours that we know.
I didn't realize it, but he was sucking me in more and more to where I would become beholden to him. And I got lucky that I met that guy, the other guy. He got into this whole thing as an investor. And I called Sam. That was his name. And I said, is this true? This is how you used me? And he said, we hemmed and he hawed, and he couldn't say no. And I hung up, and I said, I'm done. And I went into foreclosure on all of the properties. The banks called me in. They said, we'll make you a deal. We'll let you pay interest only. Big deal, right? And I said, no. I got it. I'm just going to get out no matter what it takes. And I lost all those homes, and which it was duplexes. And I got out, and during that time, I had quit Litton. Quit Litton. Quit a job with a wife and two kids. And
now two.
Craig's born.
And so Sam says, no problem. I'll get you a job with a realtor I know, and you can go and collect rent from his properties that he owns. So I became a...
muscle.
Yeah.
So to speak.
A collector.
Making half the amount I was making at Litton. And at Litton, I was rising in the ranks. I was really going up the ladder. But, so all this takes place. And I find all this out, and I quit that job. I'm without a job now. And I'm looking to get back into aerospace. Can't get back into Litton. I go to Nortronics, I got lucky, and they hired me. And I was there for almost a year. And I kept looking, because the kind of job I had at Nortronics, I was just dealing with one piece of equipment, again, testing. And finally, I got a job at TRW through the back door. Somebody I knew at Litton who had already worked there. I had already applied to Litton, TRW through the front door. And nothing happened. The back door, the guy knows me.
Put your application on the top of the folders.
Before the application, I get to talk to the manager of that department. And he had me fill everything out. He said, no problem. And that's how I started it. And that's how I started working on the Apollo program, doing with the equipment that whatever I did, and worked my way up from being a tech to being an engineer to be a sub-project manager. And God only knows how far I could have gone if I, at the age of 58, they gave me the golden handshake. We'll give you I wasn't ready to retire. I didn't have any money. We never learned how to save our money.
Right.
Mark took it all.
Of course. All the things you had to do for him and his upbringing.
He was about to pay for my law school, and then he got shaft.
So I'm 58, and they 1,200 of us, they made that offer. We'll give you a year's salary, or you stick it out and wait it out unless we lay you off. So at the last minute, I decide I'm going to take the retirement. And I think at that point I could say the rest is history. I didn't know how I was gonna.
Well, I can say something there. That's when I was starting law school, and they were going to, like they did for my older brothers, pay for all their schooling. They were going to pay for mine, and then he got the handshake there, and so I was on my own to get loans and this and that. But this is when I said I'm going to law school, and I'm going to let my hair grow, Dad. And he had very, very short hair, and he said, I'm going to let mine grow too. And you see what happened to his hair.
He got the Einstein lookalike.
And that's where that started, his second career.
Craig basically was helping me out so I could have a few extra bucks. And I was 2 weeks at the...
Right, our office, which it was actually in the same building. I wasn't there. My brother had the same building, but a different office. And there was a buddy of his that he shared space with, Tom Capalbo, who was an attorney friend of my brother's who we went to law school with. And he was the one who said, you know, with your hair like that, you put a mustache on you, you look like Einstein. I know a guy who's a lookalike manager. And at that time, I was heavy into all the acting
drugs
and things. I was acting and performing.
I'm sorry.
And I happened to know the makeup artist who did
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wait. Because when Tom said, that's all you have to do is go buy a mustache.
Go buy one.
And take.
I think I can grow one.
No, eventually it would be decades later. Well, not decades, maybe. I try to grow the mustache because. So he says, go home, take pictures of yourself. Don't go spend a lot of money.
Just normal pictures with a camera.
It would Polaroid. Black and white. I had a nice camera, actually, and I had a portrait lens. So I took some headshots of myself. And I gave it to him. And I had him, you know. A week later, I gave them to him, and it was 2 weeks after that, I get a call saying, is this Benny Wasserman, Einstein lookalike?
Wow.
I said, I have a gig. I said, I don't know what a gig is. And I hung up. I thought somebody was pulling my leg, and he calls me back, and he said it was a Japanese production company that wanted an Einstein. And he says, Benny, do you smoke? You smoke? You don't smoke, do you?
Oh,
no,
wow.
No, I don't smoke. Well, you have to learn how to smoke a pipe. A pipe. So I went and I bought a pipe at this store, and the guy showed me how to not only smoke it, but clean it, and the whole. He spent an hour with me just to do that. So I had that when I went for that first interview for that Japanese production company, and that was my first gig.
Really?
Period.
And so now in retirement, that's what you're doing. Do you still do it quite a bit?
No. This hopefully is, I say hopefully.
He's done.
My last year. Unless somebody wants to take do a photo shoot, and I don't want to do.
10 grand.
I've done movies, I've done TV, I've done print ads.
All over the world.
So do you have a bigger portfolio than your son here, Mark, who his claim to fame is, oh, look at me, I'm Mr. Mark, I can do this. Have you seen my movie? And he's sending me his reel. He sent it to me about 30 times this past month.
That was a different one.
Exactly. I made an edit. He sent it to you a few times. He sends it to everybody. Hey, have you seen my reel?
The biggest thing I did was the Pepsi commercial, and that's when I got my SAG card.
Nice.
When Mark heard me.
Oh my God, I was pissed. It took him like 3 days.
Were you really?
You know, 20 years, I'm like trying to get in the union and do-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-ding, you know? And he comes along, throws a mustache on, grows his hair, and like, here's your SAG card. Here it is.
Oh, that's great.
It's good.
Whoever thought I would end up traveling all over the world, twice to Japan, twice to Korea, to Athens, Panama City, God only knows, Barcelona, where I did a car commercial. And right now, can I say that?
Say whatever you want.
I
want
to do a commercial for Mercedes.
Why not?
I want to.
It could happen.
I want to give them lifetime use for a car.
It's all he wants is a car.
Oh, why can't happen?
My previous manager, he always would take care of that usage thing. He says, Benny, you don't know anything about that. You know, you get so much. You can't just let somebody have it forever because. And with the Pepsi commercial, it was all through SAG. So every time they showed it, you got
you're
a certain
paid.
Amount.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was a good year.
I was on there for a whole year.
That was a good year for me. Yeah, exactly.
That was a good. It was the Pepsi commercial. There was a little redhead girl who was doing Pepsi commercials, and it aired first time during the Super Bowl that year.
Shut up. It was Pepsi? It was really?
You can Google it right now. It'll come up. Pepsi commercial, Einstein.
Just Pepsi Einstein.
And that should pop up.
That's okay.
But let's not forget.
The no-brainer Einstein one?
That's it.
There's a 30-second and a 60-second one.
That's my dad's Super Bowl commercial.
I see you in it now. You're in like a room. Oh, there you are. That's a great commercial. Look at you.
Coca-Cola?
Oh, Coca-Cola.
Pepsi-Cola.
Listen.
It's a pepper box. By molecularly speaking,
they logically seem to offer two possibilities between which we are in principle given a choice. Of course, as with any randomly occurring theoretical event, Whenever you factor time and space relationships, you must invariably arrive at one and absolutely only one correct choice.
That's her. That's her whole part.
Nice, it ends with you jumping. That was a good little jump at the end.
You see that at the
you
end?
You jump and click your heels. That's awesome.
He's always been nimble and quick.
He looked great doing that. And he wasn't a young cookie in that commercial either.
No. And to this day, right, I think, you know, he gets in there to the batting cages every week. Jeez, 90 Benny, miles an hour.
Benny Wasserman, who knew
the guy who the guy who somebody told him, what was the guy's name in Winter Garden, Florida, years and years and years ago?
That you couldn't hit?
I never mentioned his name. Told him, said he was the coach.
Who couldn't hit.
George Myatt.
And crushed him, and he never tried again. 85 years old, hitting 90 miles an hour. What could he have done?
One person can do that to us in life, though, and you allowed it to happen. But it happens all across the land. I mean, every time. And the moral to what happened to you, Benny, as a young man, is don't let somebody tell you you can't do it. Who knows if you could or couldn't have? You know, there's scouts. And how many times does athletes hear that, right? There's a guy by the name of Michael Jordan who was told in high school he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now listen to this though.
Crazy.
Both sides of the spectrum.
Right.
You have the guy over there. You can't hit. You can't hit, and crushed his dream. And then you have this friend of his from the other side of the tracks.
That's been trying to get him to read.
That says books. Here's a book. Here's a book. Go to school. Here's another book. Here's another one. He doesn't read them. He throws whatever. And then he gets married and gets a book for a gift.
Did you ever get a hold of him and realize what that book was about? And then the Martin metal Eamon. Ashtray.
And his friend's name was Carl. I think now's a good time to tell
how it comes
everybody
back to Carl?
Well, Carl's the guy who gave him the books.
Carl Lewis, the runner.
No,
his name was he got the first initial right of his last name L. Carl Levin.
Carl Levin. Should I know that name? Activist.
You will in a minute.
Please,
Carl Levin.
Mark,
who I said was the president of the city council in Detroit.
Uh huh.
In 1976, went on to become a United States Senator from the state of Michigan.
Okay.
And remained there for 36 years, just retired 2 years ago. And that is the individual, like Mark just said, two ends of the spectrum. Someone who said, don't do it. Someone who said, do it. And I'm listening to both of them.
Right. Hey, at least you did both advice. Both yeah. You're just a sponge. Tell me what to do, soak me up, and I'll do it.
No, that's right. That's the way I operated on my job.
Yeah.
Whatever the boss told me to do, I did.
I'm a doer. Direct me, and Benny will do it.
So Chucky, my friend from the hood.
Chucky, which is Carl.
No.
Chucky's another guy.
No, Chucky's the hood. Chucky's the guy who wanted to steal the good cigarettes.
Side. Yeah.
And liquor.
So I was a follower all my life. I was a follower. And that's the one thing I didn't want my kids to be, a follower. I wanted them to learn to be independent. And at one point, in aerospace, I felt I was on the edge every day at work. I was going to get laid off. That was a feeling I had, the way things are going in the country and whatever. And I try to influence them to, if they were going to go to school, learn something where you can either hang up your own shingle or go to work for someone else. Let it be your choice.
Labor or whatever.
And not everybody's made to be in business for themselves.
Right.
So you work for somebody else, but recognize that you have a choice that way. So my first one comes along and I'm patting myself on the back. He's reading. He's a sponge. He's everything. I talk about
nerd.
Getting him into everything was about medicine. That doesn't mean you have to be a doctor or a surgeon. You could be an X-ray technician. You can be a nurse.
Thank God he's a lot like Fern, then, is what you're saying.
You need those kind of people are needed everywhere in the world. You don't have to worry about not ever having a job. You can always get a job. And so Michael goes ahead and he becomes a doctor.
Unbelievable.
And then my other two come along. And they don't do very well in high school. They're C-minus averages. And I tell Craig he doesn't have to go to college. He doesn't have to. And Craig said, "Don't you think my brother's smarter than me?" And I said, no, you don't read. You don't read, man. You got to read to get through it all. And so he goes to community college. He starts at
Cerritos.
At Cerritos
College.
And right away, he gets on the debate team. I said, how the fuck are you going to debate anybody? You don't read anything. He says, they give us 3x5 cards, and it's all written down what we're going to say. And then I, one way or another, I figured out, I just argue with the guy who's on the other side and try to find holes in his arguments. I said, oh, that's the way you do it? I said, well, however. So he goes on to finish, Cerritos goes on to UCLA, and then there's Mark, and then he goes to law school, passes the bar first time around.
No, Craig passed the first time around. Mark didn't. Isn't right. that the way the story goes?
Right, that right. is correct.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
But thank you for bashing you and not correcting your own story. You're letting it go.
I took it three times.
Mark's like, yeah, Dad, remember it that way. I passed it first. No problem.
And I was an actor first.
I mean, till this day, I don't understand how you don't read through high school. And you make it through UCLA. I don't know, he didn't have that great of a great point of it. That's why he couldn't make it into like Harvard or any of those kind of schools. That's why he went to Western State, which was an unaccredited school at the time.
Is this Mark?
No, Craig.
Oh, sorry.
Craig.
But Craig first.
Craig went to UCLA as well.
Yes.
Undergrad.
Yes.
Okay.
Mark, all he ever wanted was to be an actor.
Right.
And so he ended
which
up,
he does at the courthouse. Every time everywhere. He's in court, yeah.
Yeah, so when I was on jury duty once and the judge asked me, they always ask the potential jurors, what do your kids do? And I said, well, one's a doctor and one's a lawyer and one's a lawyer actor. And the judge says, actor, lawyer, same thing.
Exactly. The judge said that to you.
The judge said that.
That's awesome. Isn't that the damn truth?
Your excuse.
No, I can't.
Your excuse? You didn't have to stay here? They let you go?
I was only excused once because I learned...
He loves juries, being on them.
I've been on 10 of them. And after I got excused, and the very first one, when they do de jure, is it de jure questioning when the attorney...
Voir dire.
Never heard that word, but thank you.
And so, voir dire. Just to give you an example...
Voir dire.
Let's say the defendant was someone who stole stuff, mm-hmm. burglary. And so the question would be asked of all us jurors, have any of you ever been burglarized? What's the other word for if it's not burglary?
Robbery.
Robbery. Well, burglarized.
It's different.
Because we had someone break into our home. And so I raised my hand. Yeah, I was burglarized. Next thing I know, you're excused. And so I learned that's one good way of getting off if you want to get off. If you know what the case is about, and they tell you basically what the case is about. Well, you know,
has anybody been racially profiled? Yes. Okay, perfect. See you later.
I mean, they would ask me, is anybody in your family in law enforcement? Well, I had a cousin, well, a friend's cousin. But I learned after that first instance, I don't have to say anything.
So you're the creator of the STFU. You're the one who created you know what? I knew these boys couldn't come up with it on their own. I knew you had it in you, Benny. Come on. Yeah. Mark and Craig trying to take all this credit when early on, you're the one who figured, just shut the fuck up.
I mean... They all felt, and maybe it's generally true, statistically true, that you can have a bias in one direction or the other, and they don't want biased people on the jury for the defendant or the other side, so they start knocking people off. And it's crazy. I always felt that I've got a good enough head that I can put that aside. And I always did.
Well, I think so, too. And knowing where you came from in Detroit, knowing that you walked that line from the hood and to nice silver spoons, you better see that, and you were treated probably more hoodish back in Detroit. So I would imagine rolling that dice and judging a person's character, you have a more open look on kids from the hood, people from the hood. So therefore, you can judge them a little more with an open eye rather than, you're guilty, you're guilty, you son of a bitch.
No, here's the thing. It's not a matter of being sensitive to anybody's plight in life. Are the facts there to determine whether you're
True.
Guilty or not?
But I mean, a lot of times it's stereotyped and a lot of people are up there. They walk in the room and people will feel that way. So my point is, you're going to wait for the facts and look at it and weigh it all out. Not just go, oh, look at this freaking beaner walking in. Is that Joe Lopez? Perfect. He's guilty.
No, I'm one of the first.
That would be me.
Yes.
And one of the cases I had was a possession of marijuana. And the vote was 10-2. And 10 were...
To convict?
No. 10 were for...
Acquittal?
Acquittal.
Okay.
Acquittal. And 2 10 were for acquittal. I was one of the 10 that was for acquittal. And there was the two who were holding out. So the first thing you do is you ask them, those jurors, why they were holding out. And one woman said, if you... Okay, I got this a little bit wrong. Anybody who smokes marijuana has got a guilty of whatever crime that they had committed. That was the rationale that they were using. If someone smokes marijuana, they're guilty of that crime.
Period.
Because you're a bad person.
Oh, God.
And so we asked the second lady, I don't want to emphasize lady, it just so happened there were two women, and the other lady says, whatever she says, I go along with.
She's a puppet.
Yep.
This is in the
follower.
This is in the jury room. And so those experiences, which I have all written in my years of journal writing, but that's a whole different story.
That's 35 years straight every day since he was 50.
Unbelievable.
He's written in his journal.
I can't wait to read that. Well, you know, as we get to wrap up, we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours with you, Benny, because there's no end to the Benny Wasserman story of life and getting into your books, which we didn't get into. But, I mean, we're coming up on here an hour. And I just want to say, Benny Wasserman, you know, husband to Fern, father of three amazing boys that are nice men and a great grandfather.
Yeah, that's what counts. That's what counts.
You know what? That's your legacy right there.
I don't want to be known as the father of the doctor and two lawyers, which I'm always being told, you should be proud. I want to be told... They're two great guys who don't take advantage of people and who are ethically...
You said two. What about the
he
third?
Did,
with the
he
doctor?
Did say two.
Yeah,
he did
the
say
doctor
two.
Not taking advantage of people? He's no, you got to pay me extra and I'll fix you.
No way. If you only knew his story, oh my God.
Well, I can't because the boys don't talk about him ever. Mark and Craig, I can't get a peep out of their older brother.
I told Fredo.
Where's Fredo? He's no, the no. bad... Fredo meaning the bad outlaw from the mob?
Cut.
Benny Wasserman, it's a pleasure having you on the Grande Wash Show. Make sure you check us out, grandeandwash.com. We appreciate it. Mark, thank you so much for bringing your dad here. And thank you for spending this morning of your birthday as we recorded this on your birthday, exactly.
You know what? This is what... When it opened up, the opportunity, and I heard you were going to keep this place... It was just, what do they say?
It's good.
Synergistic kismet.
Yes, it's meant to be. So, Benny, we look forward to having you on more and more, and I look forward to hearing and learning more and more about you, as I truly am intrigued on learning about my friend's parents, and especially since me and your sons have become so close. As you know, I'm really close with this drunk right here.
maybe you'll be the first one and only one to read my autobiography.
God willing, that
because
happens.
My wife says if she lives longer than I do,
she's burning it.
It's getting burned.
I can't wait because I know you started, if I believe right, when he was a teenager. So therefore, these teenage years got to be crazy.
Well, his. Especially.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
His are in there.
Mark's teenage years is when you started writing it. You see how I already know these things? Does that not tell you how Jewish I am already? I'm your Jewish Mexican son, by the way. You know what I mean? I'm adopted in. I'm the Jew bean. Here you go.
The thing is, most of the stuff about Mark is in my journal.
Okay.
I summarized the autobiography is basically all just.
I just can't wait for you to go home tonight and write about your son's mother-in-law and go figure out that part of the story.
Oh my God. No, he said, okay.
We're not going there, but Mark, it is a real life story. We all have mother-in-laws. We all have, and if you don't, good luck to you. It's a blessing. Either way, the grass is not greener on the other side.
We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, it'll be part of the show. But thank you again, Benny. Thank you again, Mark, for coming on. It is Grande en Wass.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.